The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And for this interview, different direction, very excited, author and their new book, A Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting, also worked in the fine wine and fine spirits industry back in the day. It is Danielle Frank. Danielle, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
This is an angle I haven't seen before. I've read so many different wine books, fiction, nonfiction, ones that felt like Dan Brown, but in Bordeaux. But yours, a very different one, where you're using wine to help parents be parents. It's just a different angle. I'm wondering, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, initially, this was about 12 years ago when my niece and nephew were young. I'm very involved in their lives and I was watching them and they're great kids. But of course, most, like many kids, they whine a little bit. So they were having a wine moment and I said, Aunt Danielle drinks wine. She doesn't listen to wine. And from there, the light bulb sort of went off. I just started jotting down these funny parallels. Obviously, working in the wine and spirits industry, and I still work in the industry to this day. So having worked in the industry and also being surrounded by not only my niece and nephew, my sister, how she's raising them, but I'm very involved in a lot of my friends' kids' lives as well. So I call myself the auntie extraordinaire. So it was easy to see the fun parallels to how wine wisdom sounds a lot like parenting advice, things like letting them breathe, giving them a nice punt, which is depth. I realized that there was a playful, honest way to celebrate parents through humor and wine. And that's exactly what this is. You know, I don't claim to be an expert. It's an homage. It's a love letter to all the parents in my life and all the parents out there. Saying, I see you, I see how you're doing it. And here's, you know, a little laughter along the way.
Letting them breathe. I like that. I like that one. That is good. That is good. But the dumb thing is you're auntie extraordinaire. I describe myself as a professional uncle. I decided to wear my Funkle shirt, my fun uncle shirt. And the dumb thing is, this is an audio podcast. No one will know that. You can barely see it anyway, yet here I am with it on. Actually, the way you kind of answered one of the questions I was going to ask you a little bit later on is, did you have parents being wary of reading a parenting book by someone who is an aunt? But as you kind of mentioned, this book is a bit of a love letter to all the parents out there doing their best.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had any negative feedback, thank God. I'm very open about the fact that I am an aunt extraordinaire, you know, and as I said, you know, I'm involved in so many of my friends' kids' lives too. I'm heavily involved. And I think also sometimes an outside perspective when you're not right in the battlefield in the throes of things, right? Sometimes it's easier to see that you can turn a grape into wine. But yeah, I completely get the skepticism. Parenting is a sacred territory, but that's the beauty of the book. It's not trying to teach anybody how to raise their kids. It's just satire. It's humor. It's heart. And, you know, I always say you don't need to be a grape to be a sommelier, and you don't need to be a parent to know good behavior from bad behavior.
Yeah. And I always say to all my friends who are raising kids, I'm like, thank you for raising the next generation of taxpayers who will have to look after me 40 years from now. Using a wine term, how would you describe the structure of your book? I mean, you've kind of alluded to it with the humor involved.
Yeah, I'd say it has great balance. There is a solid backbone of real insight. Things parents tell me that they genuinely relate to, but it's wrapped in a bright, fun, drinkable, highly drinkable humor. Think of it as an easy to sip blend. You know, the aroma is nostalgia to parents. The body is real life moments you'll laugh at. And the finish is, oh my God, yes, that's so true.
What lessons, because this is sort of a two-parter, but let's start here. What lessons from the world of wine can be applied to being a parent?
From wine to parenting, one, patience matters. Rushing never improves things, right? It takes time. Many bottles of wine takes, you know, months and months for the grapes to grow and for harvest and to age in oak barrels. So rushing never improves anything. And every bottle, like every kid, is unique. You can't force a Pinot Noir to be a Riesling and vice versa. And sometimes things just need to breathe, whether it's a meltdown or a fine oaked Cabernet, oxygen and space work wonders.
And then on the other end, what lessons do you think winemakers or people that work in the wine industry, what lessons can they learn from parents?
Absolutely. One, adaptability. Parents can pivot like pros. So these skills also translate beautifully to wine service, to wine making, to hospitality. Humility. Kids will humble you instantly, and so will a blind tasting. And lastly, perspective. Parents know not to sweat the small stuff. Wine people need that reminder too. Like if a cork breaks in the bottle of the wine, it's not that deep.
Okay, see, you mentioned the humbling experience, and you're so right. It's one of the biggest themes since I started this podcast 7 years ago, the humility of the wine industry. Have you had a more humbling moment yourself doing a blind tasting or babysitting some nieces or nephews? What's been more difficult?
Well, I mean, there's both, right? I work with national hotel groups at the corporate level. So I work with Marriott Corporate and Four Seasons Corporate and so forth. So of course, it's always humbling when you're pitching your brands. They don't choose your brands, even though I think we have the best portfolio in the wine business. We have the best wines and champagnes out there. But I think kids today, man, with social media, these kids are smart as can be. And I mean, I remember when I was a teenager babysitting kids, the old tricks of let's play the quiet game or stupid things like that. They don't work with kids today. That is for sure.
Oh, yeah, the quiet game doesn't work anymore. Everything now is I'm going to take your phone away from you and I am cutting off the Wi-Fi. Your book, how much of it's also about helping parents or people learn a little bit more about wine? When you are a parent, you don't have as much time to learn about things. You don't go to the movies as much. You're not going to figure out that cool climate Cabernet is going to be different than if you get wine from the Lodi region. So, how much of your book is about helping people in that capacity?
Oh, a huge portion. I mean, that was one of the key drivers, a key inspiration for writing the book. Again, having worked and still work in the wine and spirits industry, I've learned it's all about storytelling. Prior to working in the wine and spirits industry, I was actually a publicist in the film industry. So I've always been a storyteller, whether it's pitching a film concept or story, and now it's just pitching the story, the romanticism of the wines that they're drinking. So that was a big driver for, I'm a big wine lover myself, even before I started working in the industry. So a lot of friends have, when we go out to dinner, always have me pick the wine and so forth. And I always try and empower them to, think about what they like. So that was a big inspiration for writing this book. It's, wanting to make learning about wine easy and accessible in a fun way. I call it wine education in disguise. The metaphors are grounded in real wine terminology, but you're also having a laugh along the way. It's poignant lessons about kid rearing, but you're picking up some genuine wine knowledge in a fun, approachable way.
We'll circle back in a second. And again, the book, A Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting. But first, you mentioned when you're at restaurants, you're the one doing the ordering. How often do you feel pressure about getting not only just ordering the right bottle, you may spend more on wine than some of the people at the table. So you don't want to go crazy, but there's a cool bottle you'd love to get. How difficult can it be for you, the politics of the person in charge of ordering the wine?
Yeah, I try not to take on that responsibility too much because, right, wine is so subjective. I may want, like, I love Pinot Noirs, especially from the Central Valley, but one of my friends just does not like Pinot Noirs. And, it's all subjective. It doesn't make one thing right or one thing wrong. So, I really try and impart some of my wisdom, but I empower them to pick something as well because I don't want all that pressure if they don't like it because it's not to their, what they normally would drink. And of course, we talk about the cost of what we're all comfortable spending. But you
Do you
can
ever
find some great wines without spending a lot of money, which is the beautiful thing about wine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Once you get out of some of the classic regions, you can, you know, as I always say, you can't afford high-end Burgundy, go to New Zealand. You don't want to, you can't afford Napa, go to South Africa. You know, there's so many different places to go to. How did you first fall in love with wine? Because if you're in the wine and spirits industry, obviously, and you wrote a book that's connecting wine with parenting, it's a big thing in your life. How'd you first fall in love with it all?
I think, growing up, my dad was always going out to dinner, nice restaurants, and always enjoying a good bottle of wine. So I've always seen that behavior of just enjoying a good bottle with the meal and how it relates to the meal and amplifies the meal that you're eating as well. And then as I got older, of course, in college, my tastes were not as refined, and so neither was my wallet. So, drinking drinking swill, as they say. But as I got older, I really just leaned into the appreciation of, I'm a big foodie, so when I go out to eat, really trying to educate myself more on like what's the wine that's going to pair well with this. And then, yeah, having worked in having segued from film PR to the wine and spirits industry, I really leaned into that. And at first, I just worked for a spirits-only company, but my love for wine was so deep that I moved over to a company that does spirits, wines, and champagnes, so that I can really hone in on my love and my skill set and education of the wines as well.
So I want to go over to the film publicist side to it because I've watched every Oscars since the late 80s. I've watched every Golden Globes. I'm just a big movie guy. But every time I watch the Golden Globes, I'm always trying to figure out what is the champagne. When you watch these events, do you know what they serve at the Golden Globes or the Oscars? I imagine it has to be something nice.
Well, I know for sure at the Golden Globes, they serve Moët and Chandon because that's one of the products that I represent. And that's been a partnership that our company has had with the Golden Globes for many, many years. Champagne, Moët and Chandon is the champagne of celebration. So there's no better champagne at one of the preeminent award ceremonies for sure.
And what about, I work in sports, I'm a sports radio host, and so whenever I get an athlete on, I always like to ask them when they won a championship, what was the bottle? Or there's certain famous athletes that have huge wine cellars. So I'm curious, a player named Mario Lemieux, what was the best bottle he ever opened after winning a Stanley Cup? I'm wondering, we hear about all the different parties, the Elton John party, all the parties that happen after the Oscars. I'm wondering if you have any tales, and not of, spilling secrets about drunkenness, but just if certain celebrities that have great wine taste or certain parties where, damn, I can't believe they serve that there.
I don't, well, generally celebrities want everything donated. So they're not going into their wine cellars for their parties, that's for sure. But my one regret I had is I was working at my old company, and it was after I think the Grammys, I think it was Prince that hosts a party at his house every year. He used to, obviously, the word was that, like, you're in his kitchen and he's making pancakes for everybody at like 5 in the morning. And because my company sponsored it, I was given an invite to go and I got food poisoning. And so I like, my friends at the point were like, you have got to pick yourself up and go. But I was just tied to, the toilet bowl, getting sick every second of whatever I ate. So it was not possible. But to this day, I regret. I'm just so sad I missed that. I hear it was a banging good time.
First off, yes, that sounds like an absolute tragedy. But instead of dwelling on that, now I'm wondering what I would drink with pancakes with Prince at 5 in the morning. I'm thinking either German Riesling, a little bit of sweetness, low alcohol for 5 in the morning, maybe a well-made Moscato d'Asti. Now I'm trying to think, what would I pair with pancakes and Prince at 5 in the morning?
Yeah, that's a great question. Also, some bubbles, right? It's
Yeah,
almost
of
like a
course.
little breakfast mimosa. You can leave it dry or have like a little OJ in there as well.
Scale of 1 to 10. How angry do you get if someone tells you, oh yeah, Danielle, we had mimosas and we used some of your champagne? That must be enraging.
I mean, yes, our like Moët and Chandon, Veuve Clicquot, certainly Dom Pérignon should be enjoyed without adding any modifiers to it, but If you want a bottomless Moët and Chandon mimosa breakfast, go for it. Why not?
You're much nicer than me. I'm going to be a lot more judgy than you are. This is too big of a question to give a full answer, but I'm just wondering, what is the state right now of the wine industry where you're working? You hear good and bad. You hear that younger people are more selective. If the economy is bad, people don't spend as much on wine. I'm curious. I forgot that you were still in this part of the industry and working with hotels. I'm fascinated just on the business side of things.
Yeah, we definitely see a shift, right? People are drinking low alc or no alc or moving to a CBD or mushroom infusions. But, people are still drinking a lot, not as much as they used to. But what we're seeing, especially representing a luxury portfolio, is when people are going out, they might be drinking less, but then they want to drink a little bit better. If I'm going to have one glass of wine, if I'm going to have one glass of champagne, I want it to be something I enjoy, something I'm rewarding myself with, something I know and recognize. The other thing is, I work in the on-premise, which for people that don't know, off-premise is anywhere that you buy your bottles to drink off the premises. So that's your supermarket or your Total Wine. On-premise is anywhere you go to drink on the premises, like a bar, hotel, restaurant. So in the on-premise, especially in the hotel world, people are looking for experiential. That's what's bringing them out. So as much as we can work with our clients to bring the brands to life in a fun way, whether it's an activation, we do these Veuve Clicquot terrasses or wine dinners or anything related to that, to really, give the consumer an experience that they can't always get at home, then that's really where you're going to win in the climate that we're in.
I guess you'd also recommend, and you're going to be biased on this, but this is true, is that champagne does pair with barbecue. Champagne does pair with a lot more foods than maybe people realize.
Oh, absolutely. Fried chicken, one of the best pairings. French fries. Oh, delicious with champagne. Champagne goes with everything. And it's not just celebratory. You can have it, every day of the week.
Absolutely. Okay, getting back to the book. Do you ever feel guilty if you're with friends or family members that have kids, and at the end of the night, they might have a slight hangover, but they're going to have a slight hangover with a child. You have a slight hangover, but you can maybe sleep in 20 extra minutes and take a 5 minute longer shower.
Yeah, I wouldn't say guilty is the word. That's their choice. No, I'm just kidding. I had wanted to be a mom. Unfortunately, that didn't happen for me. But I am enjoying being a dog mom. But yeah, that's I don't feel guilty. Probably more relieved to know that I don't have that wake up call. But yeah, parents tell me a hangover with kids is like doing CrossFit blindfolded while somebody's screaming, "Mommy, mommy," every 12 seconds. At least I just get silence, water, a little regret, have to run the dog out, but then once he's back, I can snooze. So it's great.
I'll never forget being in a hammock at our cottage, watching my older brother and his young kid. I'm like, woof, I'm just going to turn over in this hammock and continue the nap. But did you ever, any nephews or nieces give you nicknames related? My nephews, though, no creativity. At one point, I was just Uncle Wine. And I'm like, guys, you're smarter than that. You can come up with a better title.
Not related to wine. I'm always Aunt Dee Dee because my niece couldn't say Danielle when she was younger. So I'm Aunt Dee Dee, and now a bunch of my friends' kids all call me Aunt Dee Dee as well.
And what advice would you give to young parents when it comes to either savoring or enjoying a glass of wine on a weekday?
I mean, I think you should savor the moments with your kids, just like you should savor a glass, enjoy a glass of wine. Life is short. We need those moments. We need those moments to decompress. And if a nice glass or bottle of wine is what helps you to do so, then enjoy it.
And I think on top of that, I didn't even thought of this, is that a nice glass of wine that you're enjoying, it makes you really present. It really makes you consider what's going on in that moment, which I think a lot of parents also try to do with their kids because they realize eventually the kid is going to grow up, they're going to be 13, and their relationship with mom and dad changes at 13 than versus when the child is 7.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And everybody needs a little reset, right? And just calms you down and lets you take a step back and breathe. And you know what? I also think it's showing your kids that mommy and daddy are enjoying what they want to enjoy as well. And that's always setting a good example for your kids that, enjoy the fruits of your labor when you can.
Danielle, when this pod comes out, it'll still be several weeks before Christmas. It'll be well before Christmas. Just tell people listening why they should grab a copy of this book, why it could work as a gift with the holidays around the corner.
Absolutely. It's a perfect hostess gift for any parent, and not even just a parent, exasperated aunt or uncle, a wine lover, or somebody that just loves a good humor book. You know, pair it with a nice bottle of wine. It's a perfect gift for anybody. It's funny, it's lighthearted, easy to read, and the illustrations are great.
Danielle, and finally, any websites? Where do people go? Obviously, they can just go to, Amazon.com, A Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting. Anywhere else you would recommend people go to?
Yeah, Amazon online and Barnes & Noble online as well.
Danielle, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We didn't get to your Chargers question.
Oh, damn
but,
it.
But I was going to say, I've got... So you said you're into sports. I'm a huge football junkie, so huge. So I need O'Marrion Hampton to come back because he's on like two of my fantasy football leagues. I've got five leagues, which is too many, but he's on two of them and I need him back.
Okay, Danielle, before you go, I have him on my team as well. I hate fantasy football. I've been in the same league for 31 years. I hated so much when he got hurt.
I know him and I had him and in my other leagues, I had Cam Scadaboo, which is killing me. Oh, I know the joys of fantasy.
You know, I might keep this in. So I'm just now going to ask you a question or two. What's like, do you have like a nice bottle that you've had? Like, do you remember like a good bottle after you either won your fantasy football league, your favorite team won a game, won a playoff game? You know, like I have bottles I save for when my team wins and the Grey Cup, which is the Canadian Super Bowl, is coming this weekend. I got a beautiful old Okanagan Merlot. I'm gonna drink with the Grey Cup. So is there any like your pairings, wine with sports?
So I'm in five fantasy football leagues, which is way too much. Yeah,
you're
aggressive.
In five leagues?
It's aggressive. Last year I was in four. Somebody asked me to be in a fifth one. I won't do this again. I'll probably go down to three next year. It's way too much. You know, I'm playing against myself in one league, you know, with the players. But in one of the leagues, I'm in my ex-boyfriend's league, and it was all guys. And I won that league 2 years ago. So, you know, bragging rights as the only female. So that I opened a bottle of Clicquot Le Grand Dame because I felt like I was the Grand Dame of football. But otherwise, I love like a nice, bold red. You know, it's February after Super Bowl. I mean, I live in California, so it's not really cold, but it's when I drink my red. So I have a nice Lynch Bage or a Volnay that I will crack open when I win, hopefully, some of these five leagues this year.
I visited Lynch Bage like 2-3 years ago. That's a great bottle, and any Volnay as well. All right, yeah. we're gonna do a second goodbye. Once again, I might just keep it all in. Who knows? We'll figure it out. Danielle, thank you for reminding me to ask that question. I completely forgot about it, because I saw it in your Instagram about going to Chargers games. So again, Danielle, thank you for being on the pod.
Again, thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
I'm not going to do the same goodbye. You guys all know it, iTunes and all that kind of jazz. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.